Going Linux, episode 160, Recording Skype, the advanced episode. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Wait, no, I'm your chief executive minion, Bill Smith. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, how we record Skype conversations using one computer and Linux.
Welcome, Bill. You've been our chief executive minion for some time, but you are the co-host for this episode and for as long as Tom is away.
Thanks, Larry. I think Tom is still under the weather.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be back with us soon. And thanks for filling in. So for our audience, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, there's not much to say. I've been listening to Going Linux since episode 2. I'm a Linux enthusiast and a tech junkie, just ask my wife. As of late, I've been teaching myself about virtualization, since I like to try a bunch of different distributions, and I tend to break my machine when I try the experiments. It kind of works out for me.
Okay, so what was wrong with episode 1 that you started with episode 2?
I don't know. I just never got back to listen to episode 1. I guess I should really do that just to be a completionist.
You never got around to doing that, huh?
No, that's kind of funny. No, I've listened to every episode since episode 2 except 1. I really should do that.
Okay. Hey, I understand you're an amateur radio operator as well.
I am. One of the things I like about Linux, it has a lot of software for amateur radio, from logging software to teaching you how to the code. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Hey, do you listen to Linux in the Ham Shack? We're very familiar with that Linux podcast, and we like that a lot. Those guys over there are great.
Yeah, but sometimes they go on a tangent and they
sometimes
talk about... I was being nice.
Yeah.
It really is a fun podcast to listen to, but I don't listen to them very much. I have so many podcasts right now, it's kind of hard to every time one comes up. But yeah, every once in a while, I put it on the MP3 player and listen to it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I have a lot of podcasts that I listen to, and I have gotten to the point where I have to weed out some that I really like listening to, but there are others that I want to listen to more. So I've taken them off of my G Potter feed, and I miss them, but I just don't have time.
Larry, what do you use to listen to your MP3s? You use your Android phone?
Yeah, I just hook it up and use G Potter to move the stuff over to the Android and listen to it right there.
Okay, does that work pretty well?
It does. It does.
Oh,
it's not as automated as it is in iTunes on Windows or a Mac and plugging in your iPhone or iPod to it. That's mainly because I'm using GPotter. There are other things you can use that automate things a lot more. But I like GPotter, and I don't mind, clicking the button that says transfer to audio device.
That's an extra step.
Yeah, well, hey. For some people, that's the killer right there. Can't click that extra button. Oh, well, to each his own. So one of the things that we've done recently is forums. Have you been over to our forums?
I have. Door-to-door geek Steve McLaughlin did a nice job on those, didn't he?
He sure did. And I'm really pleased with those. So I don't know. I haven't been in there for a few days. I don't know whether you've contributed, but feel free to leave your comments and suggestions. As the chief executive minion, you're welcome to do whatever you like in there in the forums.
Yeah, I haven't. I've read some of the posts in the forums, but I haven't got around to actually subscribing and actually putting anything in there. I guess I should really do that when I find the time.
Well, now that you're officially on one of our episodes, it's almost a requirement of your contract as Chief Executive Minion that you at least make one post in the forum.
You know, that contract, things get added and taken away. I mean...
Well, it's kind of an informal, invisible contract, but...
Like my informal, invisible office at the Going Lens Towers.
Yes, that's right. We have Studio W, Studio C, and Studio E, West, Central, and East.
Well, yeah, I guess I would be Studio East because I'm all the way on the East Coast. I mean, I think we... get all the regions in the show. Tom's in the center, you're in the west, and I'm on the east. Yep. It's amazing what we can do with Skype.
Absolutely. Well, should we get into the episode, or is there anything else that we want to discuss before we get going here?
Well, I was going to ask you before we got into Skype, what's your Linux distribution of choice right now?
It's Linux Mint, and I'm on Linux Mint 12. That's what we're using to record the show with right now.
Oh, okay. Well, you sound good. I'm using that dreaded Ubuntu 11.10 with the Unity.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about what your experience with Unity has been.
When Unity first came out in 11.04, I hated it. I think I said every explicative I could under my breath when I was trying to get it to work. But when 11.10 come out, I put it back on my machine. I was running Crunchbang. I'm kind of a open box enthusiast. I like the minimal interface. Mm-hmm. And life got kind of crazy there last week, as you well know.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to take it off, so I was running around all week. And so I just basically been living in the Unity desktop. And really, once you get used to it and get it set up, it's not that bad. I don't know if they have a quite clear way they want to go with it, like GNOME 3 seems to have. But I'll probably run it for a little bit more, but I'm kind of anxious to get back to OpenBox again. It's just too much bling and things going on for me, but then again, I'm just a little ADD.
All right, well, yeah, Ubuntu has too much bling for you, I think Linux Mint would be in the same box for you. I've been really enjoying Mint since I started using it back a few versions ago, and my criteria for Linux is that it looks good and it allows me to do what I need to do on my computer operating system, primarily record a podcast using two screens, not mirrored, but extended desktop, and be able to use Audacity to do the recording, Skype to do the communicating, and not too much other than that. I mean, the rest of it is pretty much standard Linux. And when Unity first came out, it didn't allow me to do that. So that's why I ended up on Linux Mint. Linux Mint has allowed me to continue with recording the way I like to record it with the workflow that I like, and Mint 12 is working perfectly. There are a few quirks. Things work differently because, GNOME 3 is different than GNOME 2, but I kind of see the vision of where GNOME 3 is going. It's growing on me. I'm beginning to like some of the GNOME 3 features, but I'm really glad that Linux Mint has put in the GNOME 3 desktop extensions that they have. It's helped me make the transition over. I'm sure it's been helping a lot of other folks as well. And I really think that those extensions, since they are based in the standard code for making extensions for GNOME 3, I think they may actually become very popular with other distributions, even Ubuntu, if they decide to go with GNOME 3 rather than Unity in the future. I have no idea whether they'll do that or not, but if someone is using Ubuntu and replaces Unity with GNOME 3 on their own, take a look at the extensions from Linux Mint. They may just help you out. You may find them very useful.
Does Linux Mint use the bar like Ubuntu on the side?
Yes, they do, but it's hidden by default. In fact, in order to get it to display, you move your mouse up the top left-hand corner of the screen, and that's when it appears. And in fact, what appears there under Linux Mint is exactly the same as the favorites that appear on the Mint menu. So you can access those favorite applications using the GNOME 3 features or using the Mint menu. So if you want to hide the Mint menu and you want to go completely GNOME 3 for your experience, you can actually do that.
Well, I know one thing I don't like about the Unity interface is that bar when you everything likes to go full screen, and sometimes it's a little hard to multitask. But that little if you get too close to the left-hand side, the thing pops out like a Jack Russell every time. It drives me insane sometimes, especially when you've got two windows there and you're trying to either copy something over or you're trying to find something, and sure enough, that thing will pop up, and you're just like, ugh.
I know what you mean.
Okay.
Well, enough on Linux. Let's talk about recording using Skype.
All right.
Okay, so in our last episode with Tom, where we were talking about recording with Skype, the introduction, Tom and I discussed the various ways that we've tried recording the podcast, and we've talked about, using a phone to communicate back and forth, using Skype, using Google Talk, and we settled on using Google Talk in the last episode, and that worked out quite well. Same principles apply in Skype. The thing that we talked about in the last episode that may or may not surprise people is that we don't actually rely on the recording from Skype. We do record the Skype conversation, but we actually record each end of the conversation independently. And then I described how I have things set up. I verbally describe them, how I have them set up for recording the Skype conversation. And in this advanced episode, I'd like to dig into a little bit more about that. So, in the last episode, Tom and I both describe what our recording setup is. Bill, since you're new to the podcast, tell us a little bit about what you're using.
Well, the chief executive minion has to do things just a little bit different.
Of course.
I use two computers. One is basically I have the show notes and any articles that we're going to talk about, plus my Skype call to you, and it's going into a earbud that I use to listen to back and forth, and then my other computer sits over there running Audacity, just recording right off my headset. And then when I'm done, I'll just put this all into a Dropbox, and you'll pick it up.
So again, once again, we'll have recordings made on each end of the conversation, a double ender, as they call it. If everything goes well, we'll use those two recordings, my recording of my end, your recording of your end, and the Skype conversation never plays into it. If things go as they sometimes go, and the
Things never go wrong.
no, and the recording gets messed up somehow. Then we'll rely on the Skype recording as a backup.
But we know nothing ever ever goes wrong, so we're good.
Of course, of course. So, moving along into the next step here, I've put together, Bill, an article that we'll provide a link to in the show notes that actually describes some of the things that we've talked about in the last episode, 157, and this episode, 160, about the setup, the fact that we discussed Skype call recorder and various other things is all captured in the first part. And then in the second part of that article, I have taken some screenshots, actually some photographs, as well as screenshots of my setup, just to illustrate how we've got things set up on the Studio W end of
And your
things.
desk is so clean.
That's after I did the cleaning.
Oh, shh. I won't tell nobody.
Yes. Okay, so, Bill, I have two photographs there. The first one shows the connections, and I took everything off my desk and put them on the floor so that I could do the photograph. But I laid things out, hopefully, so that it's clear. And then in the second photograph, I've got a photo of the entire setup except for the headset and the microphone, because if I put those in the photograph, you wouldn't be able to see the rest of the stuff, so I kind of left them out. But so let's kind of talk about the first photograph, the actual setup. You'll see in the left-hand corner there my headset and how it's plugged into the computer.
Then it looks like it comes out to a Y.
Yeah, so I got a Y connector there, and that's really so that I can communicate with you over the headset using Skype. So the top cable there is the input directly from the headset into the computer for the microphone from the headset. And then the second part where I actually listen to you on the headset speakers is that second cable goes to one leg of the Y and then plugged into the audio output from the computer, of course.
Yeah, well, if you look at the picture when you're describing it, it makes sense. The one thing I want to know about is, what's the reason for that Y? Is just so you can monitor it and be plugged into the mixer at the same time?
Yeah, because if you try to record your conversation out of Skype directly, you'll find that it only records one end of the conversation. It only records the far end of the conversation. It doesn't record your part. If you're not using software like Skype Call Recorder, in order to make it work, what I have to do is run it through a mixer. And you'll see that in the lower right-hand part of the picture. And you'll notice I have another microphone plugged into the mixer.
The mixer, is it a real expensive one, or is it just a one of those things run to do all the magic that you do with it?
Yeah, well, this particular one is kind of a middle-of-the-road mixer. I tried a really inexpensive two-channel mixer, and that didn't work out too well. The mixer itself actually introduced some noise. And so I returned that and began buying more and more expensive mixers until I settled on this one. So this one is an eight-channel mixer from a company called Alesis, and it's a USB mixer. So you can have the inputs that you see there, the various kinds, and it has eight channels, so I could actually have eight inputs. I don't need them. I've never used any more than three, but at the time I purchased this USB mixer, it was on sale, and it just didn't make sense for me to buy a two or a four channel because this one was so inexpensive by comparison. So I don't know what the costs are now. I bought this about 3 or 4 years ago, and I think at the time it was about $100 or $150, so it's not inexpensive. It's not the least expensive, but by no means is it the most expensive mixer you can get. The key thing is not the cost, but the quality of the sound that comes out. If you can find an inexpensive mixer with a good sound that is clear, that doesn't have a lot of audio artifacts in it and doesn't introduce a lot of noise, then you're good for making your audio recordings for a podcast.
So I guess you didn't have this when you first started.
So no.
Say someone wanted to get into podcasting and wanted to record their Skype, what would you recommend they use?
Well, it would be Skype Call Recorder. And the reason you want to use that is because you don't have to have a second computer like you're using. You don't have to do a double ender where each end of the conversation is recorded independently and then edited together later. You can record both ends of the conversation, both sides of the Skype conversation simultaneously, and the Skype Call Recorder will separate it out into two channels with you as the host of the call and the person making the recording, you on one channel, and if it's just one person or a conference call, all of the other parties will be on the second channel, but it will be stereo. So you'll be able to segment your voice from everyone else's. So if there's some some noise going on in the background on your end, you can silence that while everyone else is speaking. Or if there's some noise on the far end, it's not going to separate it out into multiple channels, so you're a little limited there, but you should be able to remove the noise fairly easily from the far end of the conversation.
Okay, well, I guess that's a good way to start. Skype, for some reason, Skype call recorder doesn't work under the Unity interface, not that I'm harping on it or anything like that.
Yeah, Tom has mentioned that as well, so I don't know what's going on there. And quite frankly, I haven't tried it under GNOME 3, so it may have the same problems there. I don't know, so we'll have to give it a try.
Is there anything else that you use to record your Skype calls that's important? I see that you've got a timer. That's always helpful to see how long you're going, but
yeah, I see you're looking at the desk. Yeah. So that's just my clock that I've got sitting there to make sure that if the clock on my screen is covered up, my computer screen is covered up, I have something to look at to make sure that we're not spending like 2 hours in the podcast. So
which I have been known to talk about nothing for 2 hours, just ask anybody.
Well, we're not going to go that long with this episode. So let's see. Have we described everything? So we've got the microphone input jack, just the standard little plug, not a USB, but just the standard little audio input on the computer. We've talked about the audio output and using a Y connector, one so that you can hear it in the headset and the other so that you can record it on channel. Well, in the illustration here, it's channel 2 of the mixer. And then the microphone that I'm recording my voice on goes into channel 1. And that's really it from a cabling perspective. And then the setup on the desk is really up to you, depending on what kind of desk you have. And, you know, do you have a second monitor like I have? But just to complete things, normally what I do is I have Audacity running on the laptop screen on the left, and I watch the signal there as the voice is recorded to make sure that it doesn't drop out or stop recording or anything like that. And I haven't for years had any problems with Audacity, so that's nice. Sometimes I'll have the volume control in Linux open as well so that I can do some adjusting there if I need to. And then over on the right-hand screen, the extended screen, I'll have the Google Doc open with the notes for the episode. And I may have some other things open there, like if we're playing audio feedback from somebody, I may have it open there on one of the other screen. And I'll have somewhere, usually on the right-hand screen, I'll have a Skype chat window open as well. And that's primarily so that we can communicate with one another before beginning the recording, before we actually start the Skype call, and then afterwards after we hang up in case there's something went wrong. And in the screenshot, I don't know if you can zoom in enough to see the details there, but you'll see that I've got a conversation going on with Tom there where we're talking about some audio problems that we were having. Not that ever happens, you know.
No, nothing ever goes wrong on right. One of these podcasts. Right. So I guess you all this just fell together your very first time. You hadn't learned anything over all your podcasts.
Yeah, it was perfect the first day out. Yeah,
I'm sure it was.
Yeah, the first time Serge, my first co-host, and I recorded. He was recording his end. I think he was using a Mac, as a matter of fact. And he recorded his end using Audacity. I recorded my end using Audacity. We did not record the Skype conversation, although we did we use Skype or did we use a phone? I think we actually used a phone call. Since we were both in California, there weren't any toll charges or long distance charges or anything like that. So that's been a few years now. I don't remember. But we did, whether it was a VoIP connection or whether it was a standard phone connection, we didn't record that. We didn't even attempt to. So it was always done as a double ender. And if there was something wrong with one end of the recording or the other, we had to do it over. So
no fallback there.
No. Well, the fallback was do it over. Bill, is there anything else that you would like to add into our discussion here of recording using Skype?
Well, the only thing that I noticed that we didn't talk about was the actual software that you use. You use the Skype, of course, but
yeah,
you use Audacity. And how Audacity's been around for how long?
Oh, years and years and years.
And I'm sure it's real expensive too, right?
Oh, of course. It's the same price as most Linux software and open source software. No charge.
I might be able to afford that.
Yeah. So Audacity is cross-platform as well. It works on Windows, Linux, Mac. I'm sure it works on BSD as well. And maybe, I don't think they have an OS 2 version, but that's getting back there.
Yeah, actually, I won't tell you. I used to run OS 2, so we won't go there.
Okay, fair
but
enough.
But no, you pretty much described it. I like your setup. I'm kind of jealous. I wish I had a mixer to play with, but... One day when I get a raise for being the chief executive minion, maybe I can afford one.
Okay, we'll double your salary right now. How's that?
So 100% of zero is still zero. I love it. Thanks. Can I have a bigger office too while I'm at it?
Sure. Open the window.
Stick your head outside.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know what? We all get paid the same. Fair distribution of the income. Actually, speaking of income, we do have a donation button on our website, and it's on the homepage. So if you do want to donate, go in there and donate. I'm not talking to you, Bill. I'm talking to our audience here. Anything that we receive in the way of donations goes to assist in the hosting costs and any other costs related to the podcast. So we appreciate that.
And thank you for sponsoring our episode.
Community supported.
Larry, what do you use when you are on Computer America to record? And how do you do that?
Good question. Well, I've had a little varied experience on Computer America. The Computer America show itself is a radio show, and so they do the recording themselves. And for those in our audience who have gone to the Computer America website, you can find their recordings. It's a little difficult to dig in and find them, but they do record them, and they're available just a few hours after the show is finished. And most of the time, I use their recording for the show, and I edit out the commercials and stuff because those advertisers aren't paying the Going Linux podcast to broadcast their commercials. And I edit out a few other things like ramblings about movies and all kinds of other things that we get off talking about that may not relate to Linux. So if you want to listen to the unedited version, you can get that from Computer America. But I'll usually use their recording. I also make a Skype backup recording because we do communicate over Skype now. For most of the first episodes, we didn't. It was over a phone, a standard landline telephone. They insisted on that for the best quality at the time. As they moved to Skype and found out that Skype actually was better quality than a phone call, it became possible for me to do the backup recording using Skype. So I do that today. And if there's something funky with the Computer America recording...
That never happens.
No, of course not. I will use that backup Skype recording. Now, when I use the backup Skype recording, the channel that's the best quality is my voice, and there's a little Skypiness to the voice of the Computer America hosts. If I use the Computer America recording, my voice sounds like it's on Skype, because it is, and their voices sound... Well, let's say variable. what I found is on their recording, they, I don't know how they're doing it, but sometimes Craig Crossman's voice is the loudest. Sometimes his co-host Ben's voice is the loudest. Sometimes when we come back from a commercial break, one of their voices will be a little bit lower, as though they adjusted the volume over the commercial break. So I don't know what's going on their end. And sometimes I have to adjust the volume within the recording, so the editing gets to be a little funky. Even the Computer America episodes take some editing, not just to edit out the commercials, but to editing for quality as well.
Now, you're going to edit, make me sound good here, right?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
You'll sound perfect. Especially if I use your Audacity recording.
Because then we know it's not variable.
Right. It's the best recording that could be made.
Okay.
So I think we can wrap up this episode. Do you have anything in the way of a software pick or anything that you'd like to talk about?
Well, actually, I have one that I am pretty excited about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure everybody's heard of what they've I'm going to say this, Tom's going to hate it, the Windows word, but you've heard of the Windows Media Server. Well,
yeah.
I'm not going to buy a license for that, but I'd like to have some of the features. Well, there is a project called Open Media Vault, and it's open sourced. It does the same thing and more that the Media Server from Microsoft does, only it doesn't cost anything, and it has a beautiful Ajaxy, when I say Ajaxy interface, a beautiful modern looking interface. It walks you through setting it up. Basically, what this thing is you set it up, you unhook everything, the monitor, the keyboard, and the mouse, and you stick it in a closet somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And you put your music and your videos, and how you administer it is that it has its own little website, and you go to it, and you can do all the settings right over your network, so you never really have to touch the physical machine once you set it up. You can do your emails, you can do videos, you can do songs, podcasts, and you need some more drive space. You know, you've got another 5,000 songs you want to put on there, where you just hook up another drive to it, and it automatically adds it to its size. So it's pretty slick, and it's at Open Media Vault. It's based on Debian, which is it's pretty awesome. And I saw, you can go to YouTube and see some of the demos of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to give Steve McLaughlin credit for telling me about this, because I was playing with Ubuntu, trying to get it to do some of this stuff with various degrees of success. And he said, hey, why don't you look at this? And of course, someone's already done it better, quicker, and it works. So,
hey, that's great. So you say it's based on Debian. So is it a distribution that you actually install on a computer and then run it from there? Or what is it? It's a media server?
Yeah, it's a media server. It's basically a distribution.
Uh-huh.
That it's you would install it like you would any other Linux distribution. It'll come up and say, hey, I see your drives, I'd like to do this, and it walks you through step by step. And the whole idea of the project is to have a super simple media server set up with a nice friendly user interface, so even if you've never looked at one, you can look at it and set it up by yourself. And from what I've seen and played with it, I played with it in a virtual machine, it's pretty slick.
Wow. Okay. So do we have a URL for that we could put in the show notes maybe?
It's www.openmediavault.org.
So it's openmediavault.org. Okay.
Yeah. And just remember, you don't need a real powerful machine to run it on either. Any secondhand computer and some spare hard drives, they don't even have to be matched hard drives. You just kind of put them there and it pulls it all together.
And that's cool. So obviously, if you're using USB hard drives, you want to use the fastest USB possible. So if you've got USB 3, great. If you've got USB 2, great. If you've got USB 1, probably not going to work.
I will tell you that actually, there is one feature that this one has that the new Windows server doesn't. Microsoft took out the what they call drive pooling on the new media servers. Okay. So you used to be able to hook up 3 or 4 hard drives and expand it. Well, they disabled that. They took it completely out. Well, Open Media Vault still has that, from what I understand, and they basically, it just works. And just a more official name of it's called Network Attached Storage, or NAS. Mm-hmm. If you ever heard those terms, that's what it is. It's okay. Network Attached Storage.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that. Now, how does that, I'm going to call this my software pick, even though you suggested it yesterday. How does that compare with Opera Unite, something that you shared with me yesterday? Opera Unite, according to their website, is a technology platform that allows you to share content directly with friends without having to upload anything to your website. You can stream music, show photo galleries, share files and folders, even host your own web pages directly from your browser. It sounds similar to what you describe. What's the difference? And can you tell me a little bit more about Opera Unite and how you've set it up?
Sure. Opera Unite is basically, when you go to their site, you download their browser, and it's all built together. And you sign up for an account, and you can install what they call add-ons. They have a web server add-on, a file server, streaming server, chat, and it's all done through software. I would say that it's auto-magical, because it just works, which is it was phenomenal. I think I called you yesterday, and what I did is, when you set it up, it asks you what's the folder you want to share. So you either create a folder on your drive, and you put everything you want to share into that folder. Mm-hmm. And then the Opera Unite gives you a web URL that you give to your friends, or you use yourself at any other computer, and you can access your stuff. And what's really cool is it can be open, or you can have it password protected. So say I had some files that were yours, and I could throw them into this shared folder, send you an email, say here's the link and here's the password, and you could go in and download it right straight from my computer. Now there is a small drawback, is that you're not doing anything like BitTorrent or anything. It's coming directly from your machine. Mm-hmm. But if you have a decent connection, it's pretty quick.
Yeah. So I guess the main difference is with Open Media Vault, it's designed for you to share your media within your network, and you need a separate machine for that. Whereas with Opera Unite, you can run this shared media server from your existing Linux desktop and make it available within your network, outside your network, whatever option you want there. And one disadvantage is that you're using the same bandwidth that you would be using for your internet connection. And if you've got a cap on your bandwidth, you've got to be careful of that. If you've got, if you've got limited space or security concerns, I would think you need to look into what the Opera. Is this the same Opera as the browser company? Opera?
It is.
Okay. So I'm sure they are concerned about security and stuff, but I would want to look into that before sharing that connection with anyone else.
I think mainly what Opera Unite's aimed at is someone just wants a quick and dirty way to share some files or listen to some music while they're at work without having to listen to like Pandora or whatever. They just want to listen to their music.
Yeah.
So when they're not there, they can listen to their stuff. They can grab files and stuff. I don't think it was really aimed at a professional. I think it's more of just making things a little easier. If you happen to use Opera, it's already built in, and so you might as well use if it's there.
Ah, okay.
But it is slick. It is slick, and it's that real high price again of free.
Now that's great. That's great. And the URL for that will be in the show notes too. It's unite.opera.com, and you can sign up there and get yourself started. So that's great. Thanks for sharing that. So I think, Bill, that's the wrap to the show. So our next episode is listener feedback. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
You can email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use our new forums, thank you, Steve, to leave your topic suggestion in a thread labeled Topic Suggestions. And they are at forums.goinglinux.com.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. And our voicemail line, if you want to use the telephone to send us a voice recording, is 1-904-468-7889.
Follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We're Going Linux.
You can download our episodes from our website, or you can use the HTML5 player or the Flash player to play them right there on the show notes page. So until next time, thanks for listening.
73s, as the hams say.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.